By all accounts in history, he was a good ruler. Like a good father, Edward was fair, wise, and willing to fight for his people. Legend has it that he died on the battlefield when the Scots tried to invade back in 1226. He didn't just send his men out, but went himself to hold the wall. He should be our inspiration today as we of the House Langdon consider our future. Wisdom, fairness, and bravery should be the cornerstone of this family, and I intend to make it so as we start our next century together. I stand before you today, committing to those principles, and promising to serve the people of Avonia through all the storms that may come our way. If and when I am given the privilege to take the throne, I promise you, I shall not only listen to you and be accountable to you, but I shall hold the wall. The applause is nothing short of thunderous. I tear up as people all around the room rise to their feet. He grins down at me and nods at various people in the crowd until the ovation ends. Now, let's get on with the party. Drink up, eat up, and let's dance, because 800 years is a hell of an accomplishment. Arthur bows, then walks past his father off the stage and makes his way to me, shaking hands the entire way down the aisle. When he finally gets to me, he holds out his hand. "May I have the pleasure of your company for the first dance?" I blush like a schoolgirl as he leads me out onto the center of the dance floor. The orchestra starts up. Arthur presses one hand to my back and holds my hand with the other one, with a loose but firm grip. "Do you waltz?" My heart is pounding, and I'm trying very hard not to notice the 2,000 eyes trained on us as he starts to move. Poorly. Well, I'm glad I spent all those years in Prince Charm's school, then, because I can make anyone look good. He gives me a little wink, and I relax and let myself go as he glides us around the floor. "You were amazing," I say. "Absolutely perfect." "That's only because I've had the perfect woman to show me what the people needed to hear." He dips me and my heart flutters. "One who helped me get my head out of my regal arse." We dance together for 2 songs before an older woman in a bright pink gown cuts in. I step to the back of the room and pour myself a punch. I feel a little like a wallflower, standing alone at the punch table, drumming my fingers on my glass to the beat, but no one else is watching me now that I'm not with Arthur. I feel a tap on my shoulder, and I turn to see 2 young men grinning at me. "You're the shock jogger girl, right?" "That's me." "Told you," says the tall one. "Pay up, loser." "Fine." The shorter one gives him a high five, then grins at me. "How much did that hurt, getting shocked like that? It looked bloody painful." "I wouldn't recommend it." They both laugh, then the short one says, "Can we get a picture with you?" "Why not?" I smile politely. When they finish with me, they walk away, and I make a beeline for the terrace. I suddenly feel very much out of place, and I can feel 1,000 set of eyes on me right now, and not one of them belongs to the man I need to see right now. He seems to have disappeared. As I am passing the bar, I see a group of very regal-looking women pointing to me and whispering to each other. I give them a little nod, and then it happens. My left heel snaps off, and my foot slams against the floor. I watch helplessly as the heel spins out onto the dance floor. "Yep, that's what I needed right now, the humiliation of a heel break." I lift my left foot onto my toes and try to walk out without doing the whole up-down walk, but it's no use. My right heel is too high for me to remain level. I hear a burst of laughter behind me as I walk out the door. Can this night be done?
31. Shiny Crowns and Pinky Toes. Arthur. I'm outside walking through the garden with my grandmum, But in my mind, I'm back in the ballroom with Tessa. You're awfully quiet, Arthur. What's racing around in that brain of yours? She pats my arm with a hand. Sorry, Grandmum. Were you saying something? Yes, I was starting to tell you how proud you've made me. You should really listen up, because I may not have many more chances to fill your head full of compliments. I glance down at her, and my stomach drops. She looks so frail this evening, even though she's smiling. Her skin has become so crinkled and translucent, it's as though she might at any moment crack into dust. Don't say that. You're going to be around for a long time. Yes, of course I am. I meant that you so seldom take the opportunity to impress me. Ouch. I'm pretty sure the Dowager, Countess Violet Crawley from Downton Abbey, was based on my grandmother. She has every bit as much snark. You know what? You've never been the stereotypical grandmother, the type who bakes cookies and thinks your grandchildren can do no wrong. What would be the point of that? She asks. Besides, you've got the rest of the world to pump up your already sizable ego. Well, thank you. You're quite welcome. Now, I want to tell you something, and I need to keep your mind on what I'm saying, rather than let it wander back to that lovely young woman with whom you're so obviously sleeping. Grandmum, we're not... Give me a little more credit than that, Arthur. I may be as old as Jesus, but I'm not thick in the head. She stops at a stone bench and starts to sit down. I try to help her, but she waves my hand away. Stubborn old mule. Foolish young goat. I flop down next to her and chuckle. So, what do you need to tell me? I made a number of mistakes in my life, Arthur, one of which was allowing your grandfather to raise your father with very little input from me. She sighs. At the time, I believed it was just how things had to be. I didn't know the first thing about how to rule a nation. Back then, wives yielded to their husbands, not like today, when more often than not, the men rarely have any say when it comes to their offspring. Anyway, had I been stronger, I would have followed my instincts and insisted on having an equal hand in your father's upbringing. Something more balanced, with greater emphasis on the importance of human connection and what was once considered feminine, feelings, compassion, empathy, those types of things. She stops and stares at the palace for a moment, and I'm not sure if she's forgotten why we're out here, or if she just needs a minute to think. Just when I'm sure she's got dementia, she turns back to me, her eyes watery. We messed up, Arthur. We messed up very badly, and your father has wound up mistaking ruthlessness for strength. He's been a grave disappointment as a son, a king, and a father, cutting himself and the family off from the people, disregarding their concerns. I'm afraid he's to go down as the Marie Antoinette of Avonia. I doubt that very much. In his entire life, I don't think he's ever offered anyone cake. Right you are. He's far too selfish to do even that, isn't he? She asks. He was awful to Cecily. Just awful. No wonder she... She stops and shakes her head. If I had realized how delicate your mother was, I never would have selected her. You couldn't have known she would... But I should have been paying attention. She was so dreadfully unhappy. Her voice shakes. He never looked at her, never spoke to her, just pretended she wasn't there unless she gave him reason to berate her, which seemed to happen with an alarming regularity. It was a miracle that they even produced one heir, let alone two. It's okay, you don't have to explain, because I do not want to think about my parents producing heirs, thank you very much. Yes, I bloody well do. The family is in trouble, and it's because of the piss-poor job your grandfather and I did raising a king. She lets go of my hand and points to me. But you, my dear boy, can save the monarchy. I saw it tonight when you were speaking. You won over that crowd, and believe me, before you got up on that stage, half that room was filled with enemies. You need to lead this family to victory. But I'm not the leader of this family. A title doesn't encourage others to follow. It's the things you spoke of tonight. Wisdom, bravery, and a fair mind. You've got all three in spades, my boy. You just have to let people see it. I promise I'll do whatever I can. I know you will. I just wanted you to know that I believe in you. I feel a lump in my throat, and have to look up at the sky for a second to stop from becoming emotional. What the hell is wrong with me lately? First with Tessa, now with Grandmother. We may be facing an uphill battle, but at least we can be grateful your father didn't pay any attention to you when you were growing up. If he had, you may have ended up being a real horse's ass too. I burst out laughing. Are you offended? Not in the least. Too bad. I was hoping to shock you. I've spent 84 years being prim and proper and bored out of my fucking mind. I intend to go out with a bang. I lower my face and give her a light peck on the forehead. Good for you. I hope the bang lasts a very long time. Me too, she says. But just in case I'm not here to guide you, I want you to continue what you started tonight. Let your heart lead you. Always find your humanity and look for it in others. If you and that royal watchdog can find yourselves in a bed together, you can make peace with anyone, including the Prime Minister and the people. My mouth drops to my knees. How long have you known who Tessa was? From the first night she was here. I have no idea why, but everybody seems to think I don't watch the news. Why didn't you say anything? Because it's so much more fun to let you all think you can put one over on me. Easier, too. You know how many things I get out of by pretending to be feeble and confused. I laugh, and she joins in, resting her head on my shoulder. When it's over, she says, We should get back. I'm sure your young lady is wishing you were here with her. I stand and offer her my hand. This time, she takes it and lets me help her up. We link arms and stroll back toward the castle in the warm, early summer's evening. You'll be a wonderful king, Arthur. Fight for what's rightfully yours. And once you're wearing that crown, I promise it will have an entirely new sheen. Thank you, Grandmum. You know, you've always been my favourite in the family. I know. You're supposed to say I'm your favourite too. You want me to lie? Yes, I suppose I do. Too damn bad, she laughs. Now, about your Tessa. You're going to have to fight for her, too, because in order for you to become the man I know you can be, you're going to need someone of her strength and intelligence by your side, not to mention someone to laugh with. I think she's not poppycock. She's perfect for you. She's precisely the one you need. Now, man up and make her yours. As we approach the palace, I see Tessa standing on the far side of the terrace alone, staring up at the sky. Even from this distance, she takes my breath away. I have to fight the urge to abandon my grandmother and run to her. Go, I'll be fine. No, I'll escort you inside. No offence, but I'd rather be on the arm of the handsome young Ollie, if you don't mind. She pats my arm, then slips hers away from me. Come here, gorgeous. Ollie's ears turn pink as he hurries over and holds her under the crook of her elbow. As I watch them walk inside, I hear her say, So, Ollie, dear, what are your thoughts on older ladies? I chuckle as I jog up the 3 steps to the terrace and make my way to Tessa. She turns and looks at me, then smiles. But her eyes don't light up the way they normally do when she sees me. What's wrong? I ask, as soon as I am close to her.
I broke my shoe.
She holds up one sparkly stiletto missing its heel. Oh, God. I've seen that happen to a woman once. It was both hilarious and cringeworthy at the same time. She sets the shoe on the stone railing.
Well, I was cringing, and everyone who saw it definitely found it hilarious.
She crosses her arms and rubs her upper arms with her fingers. Well, I wish I had been there to sweep you off your feet when it happened. I take off my jacket and wrap it around her shoulders.
That would have shut them up.
She smiles.
Thanks for the jacket. That's a pretty slick move, Your Highness.
I'm famous for being slick. Now, what are we going to do about your shoe?
I think I'll limp back to my room. Those damn heels were giving me blisters anyway.
Not on my watch. Reaching one hand under her knees, I lift her into my arms. She squeals out a laugh and wraps her arms around my neck. When we reach a stone table, I set her down carefully and take off her other shoe.
You must have been at the top of your class in Prince Charming School.
I pick up one foot and rub it. And the funny thing is, it doesn't bother me at all to hold her warm foot. Normally, there is no way in hell I'd be touching someone's sweaty toes. But because they belong to her, they're lovely to me. It was Prince Charm School, and yes, I was an A-plus student. I rubbed the other foot for a moment and inspect her toes. Her pinky toes have horrible red blisters along the sides. Good God, I don't think we've got one torture device in the dungeon that would outdo high-heel shoes. And yet, you women put them on willingly.
So, you do have a dungeon. I knew it.
It's used for storing wines now. They got rid of all the torture devices years ago. I pause and examine her foot again. Would you like me to take you back to your room? We could spend the rest of the evening snuggled up watching TV or doing some of the things I had in mind earlier.
As completely perfect as that sounds, you're needed back inside. Show the people here those weren't just nice words before. They need to know you actually will follow through with the whole accessibility thing.
In truth, the only person I really want to be accessible to right now is sitting in front of me.
And she can't let you do it.
Her words warm my heart. As I stare at her, I realize she is the only one whom I want by my side. Win or lose. Wait here. I'll be right back.
32. The clock strikes 12. Tessa. I sit on the table under the stars, inhaling his scent from his jacket. God, he smells so freaking good. Unforgettable streams out onto the terrace through the open doors, and I hum along happily to the tune. It reminds me of dancing around the living room on my granddad's feet. I think of him and wish he were here to talk to right now, because I don't have the first clue what I should do. I'm in love with a good man for the first time, but he's also a man I haven't been honest with. I've kept one foot in his world and one back in my old one, entertaining a job offer from his nemesis. I stare up at the stars and whisper, feeling very silly. Send me a sign, Grandad. Tell me what to do. Here we go. I turn and see Arthur striding toward me, carrying a small silk bag. I figured out a way for me to stay at the party and you to stay with me. My face spreads into a wide grin. He looks so pleased with himself that it's like catching a rare glimpse of him as a little boy. I watch as he pulls out a pair of ballet slippers. They belong to my sister, but she's never worn them, so you don't have to be disgusted by the thought of wearing used shoes. He lifts my left foot and places it on his thigh, then retrieves a couple of band-aids from his jacket pocket. I watch as he wraps my toe, then picks up one of the slippers and slides it onto my foot. Other one, please. I switch feet and gaze at his face as he works. His eyebrows knit together as he carefully wraps my other toe. His hands are gentle, loving even. If you show this side of yourself, you'll win. He looks up at me for a moment, then slides the second slipper onto my foot. You're saying if I spend the next few weeks fixing up boo-boos for the entire kingdom, I'll win. I'm not kidding. Let them see who you really are. I promise if they meet the real Arthur, they will love you. How can you possibly know that? Because I quite possibly love you, and I am the worst of them. He drops my foot and looks into my eyes. My heart pounds and my stomach flips, and I'm suddenly terrified that I've said too much. This wasn't supposed to be anything other than a bit of fun, and I sort of just told the Crown Prince I may be falling in love with him. His face is so serious it frightens me. Oh, God. I know he's going to dump me. Easy or hard, it won't really matter. All of this magic is about to come to a crashing end. But it doesn't. He moves closer to me, pressing himself up against the table where I sit. I watch as his mouth opens, waiting for him to say something, anything. But he doesn't. He just leans down and kisses me like his life depends on it. His lips crush mine and I taste champagne and smell his delicious cologne. I close my eyes and allow myself to fall even deeper. I wrap my arms around his neck and feel his hands on my waist as our mouths continue to move together in the most passionate, perfect embrace. When we finally come to our senses, we're both panting from the heat of it. "We should go inside," I say, regretting the words as soon as they roll off my tongue. "Yes, we should." He lifts me off the table and sets me onto the patio. I flex and point my right foot, then smile. "Very comfortable, Your Highness. Thank you." "Don't thank me. You're the most exciting person here. I wouldn't have a moment's fun without you." I find that hard to believe. There are at least 200 single girls in there who would happily see to it that you'd have a good time. 312, actually. But if they don't look exactly like you, or sound exactly like you, or think exactly like you, then they won't hold my interest for more than a minute. He kisses me again, then pulls back and says, "Let's go test out those dancing shoes." Oh, God, I am in love. I am so very in love. The feeling bursts through my chest and excites every nerve ending. Then that pang of guilt flickers again and douses the happiness. If this relationship is going to have any chance at all, we have to start with a clean slate. And it must start with me meeting problems head-on rather than sweeping them under the rug. "Arthur, wait. I need to tell you something." His face falls a little. "Jack Jansen offered me a job, sort of, as a speechwriter. He approached me at the ship christening, and I didn't want to tell you because I didn't know if I could trust you. Not until tonight." I let the words spill out quickly, my heart pounding in my chest. "I see." He does not look happy. Damn it! Why did I lift the rug? Why? "And what were you to do in order to get the job?" His words are clipped in a way I have only heard him use with Damien. "Bugger. I was to report anything useful I found to him before making it public. But I haven't found anything. But you were looking." "Yes. No. I mean, at the beginning I was, of course, but then things changed between us, and I stopped. But I didn't tell him no. I'm really sorry. I should have told you weeks ago. It's just that this entire time I've had to allow for the possibility that you were just using me." I close my eyes, unable to face him. "Because you were worried about falling for another asshole like Richfield." "Exactly," I say, feeling a surge of relief. "I have a bad habit of falling for the wrong..." I stop, and my head snaps back. "How would you know about Barrett?" He swallows hard. "I had to have an extensive background check run. I'm sure you'd have expected that." "Not really." My entire body feels numb. "But I suppose it makes sense. Even though it is a little jarring to find out someone you've been sleeping with for several weeks ran an extensive background check on you." His eyes harden. "Yes, I suppose as jarring as finding out the woman who's been sharing your bed has been looking to get a job by screwing you over." "Maybe more so, even." I'm on the verge of sarcasm. We stare each other down for a moment, both of us intent on righteous indignation. "Wait, how extensive?" He glances away for a second, and I know I'm about to get the upper hand, even though I'm sure I don't want it. Job history, educational background, previous addresses, financial status. I back up a few steps to put some distance between us. Nope, don't want the upper hand. Arthur takes one step toward me. Tessa, the order was given before you even got here, when you were considered the biggest threat to my family's reputation. But I promise you, I've made sure the results of the report will be kept a secret. I scoff at the word secret, which in his world extends to a circle of people no fewer than 20 wide. What else did you find out about me? That you've had some exceptionally bad luck with men. I also may have seen and used some information from your old online dating profile, but that was before I really got to know you. I suddenly feel sick. Oh my God, do you even like jelly babies? Not really. They're a little too sweet. Arthur, there you are. I turn my head and see an absolutely gorgeous redhead striding toward us, her black gown swaying along with her tiny hips. Brooke, I didn't think you were able to make it. Brooke. Lady Dr. Brooke frigging Beddingfield. He didn't think she could make it. Oh, Christ, I really don't have the first clue what this man has been up to when we're not in bed together. I wouldn't miss this. I flew in late this afternoon. Ignoring me, she kisses him right on the lips. A long one, too, not a little peck. Arthur pulls back, looking more than a little uncomfortable. But who is he uncomfortable to be seen with? Me or her? Brooke, I'd like you to meet Tessa. She glances me up and down, then says, charmed, I'm sure. The look in her eyes says she's anything but charmed to see me. I hope you won't mind, but I need to steal the prince away from you. Clearly done with me, she turns to Arthur. There are some very important people you'll want to meet, and I've managed to arrange a little sit-down with them on your behalf. Oh, well, thank you. I'll be there in a minute. I just need to finish this conversation. I'm afraid they won't wait. She smiles sweetly, but underneath that smile is a very determined woman. I give Arthur a meaningful look. Don't waste the opportunity on my behalf. I'm pretty sure we're done here anyway. He stares at me for a moment, then nods. Very well. Brooke links arms with Arthur and maneuvers him in the direction of the ballroom. I watch them walk away, my head swimming in the murky waters of our deceit. I take a few minutes to collect myself, then set my shoulders back and walk into the ballroom, trying desperately not to notice the slippers hugging my feet. Trying not to think about what almost just happened between us, or whom he's with at this exact moment, I walk quickly, hoping to get through the ballroom unnoticed. I'm almost at the doors when a hand is extended to me. I look up and find myself face to face with King Winston. Miss Sharp, may I have this dance? Oh, why not? It's only the worst moment of my life. I curtsy, then follow him to the dance floor. He turns to me, then places one hand on my waist and uses his other to guide me around the floor. I apologize for not finding time to meet you sooner. No need. You've been in the middle of a crisis. Even more reason to maintain one's manners. It's by our conduct when in our worst moments that we are judged. So true. I smile but wonder if he's seen the report on me too. He must have. My cheeks burn with humiliation. I'm surprised you would want to talk to me at all, really, after everything I've written about your family. He shrugs and gives me a friendly smile. You were just doing your job. Besides, some of it you had right. Well, that's not what I was expecting to hear. Not after everything Arthur said about him. My son certainly seems taken with you, and I can see the feeling is mutual. He's a wonderful person. That he is. Do you love him? It's a simple question. He smiles, but his words are curt. You either do or you don't. I'm afraid we find ourselves in a rather complicated situation, so some words are best left unsaid. He told me you were intelligent. I must confess I didn't quite believe him, but now I see it for myself. Thank you, Your Majesty. Thank you. For assuming I'm an idiot? If you are in love with him, you now find yourself in the unfortunate position of making a very difficult choice. You can declare your love for him, thus losing any shred of professional credibility you've managed to cling to and costing him his crown. Or you can leave him, thereby saving both your own career and his. He pauses, then gives me a smugly satisfied look before going on. As his loving father, which of those choices do you think I'd like to see you make? The second one. Smart girl. I'm assuming smart enough to realize that were you and my son to get married, you'd only ruin him. Ruin him? Nuh-uh. I was just about to slink out of Arthur's life, but now I may have to change my mind, even if it's only to prove this asshole wrong. How exactly would I ruin your son? By being you. Arthur can't marry some armpit-sniffing, breast-checking, accident-prone commoner. He needs someone graceful, accomplished, and well-born as his queen. Someone people will respect and admire. Someone like Lady Bedingfield. Precisely. Ouch. Here's the King Winston that Arthur warned me about. It's like he somehow knew exactly what to say that would hurt the most. Everything I've said to myself. I'm nothing, no matter what, Arthur says. The king goes on. I know this must be difficult for you to hear, but I only want to do what's best for both of you. At some point, the fog of new passion will lift, and Arthur will see he's made a terrible mistake. Better to know early on than when you're in too far. My heart feels like it's being squeezed with every word. I want to tear away from this awful man and run from him, straight into Arthur's arms. But then I realize I don't want to run to him either, since he very likely has just been using me this entire time. The song ends and King Winston keeps hold of my hand. You don't look well at all. I'll have my man Damien escort you to the vault to return that necklace. I believe my carriage has just turned back into a pumpkin, hasn't it?
33. Ridiculous hats and bitter disappointments. Arthur. It's nearly 2 o'clock in the morning, and the guests have finally left, and I can't find Tessa anywhere, which is panic rising in my chest. Brooke's timing could not have been worse. If only I had a chance to explain to Tessa that it was all real. Everything I said to her, I meant. But then again, maybe it was only real on my end. She's the one who is looking for ammunition to hand over to Jack the Wanker Jansen. I'm angry and hurt, but I still hate like hell to know she's feeling the exact same way about me. After Brooke showed up, I ended up stuck in a long but vital discussion with some very powerful friends who were willing to pull out all the stops on our behalf, and I could hardly leave them to go find Tessa. But now, as I hurry to the private residences, I know in my gut that she's gone. I check her room first, letting myself in with the key she gave me weeks ago. Her bed is made, the closet empty. She is gone. I hurry around the suite for any sign of her, then rush to my room. When I open the door, I see them. The slippers are sitting neatly on the coffee table. Next to them is an envelope. I tear it open and see her handwriting.
Arthur, we've been playing a horribly, stupidly dangerous game, and I've decided to end it. Even Michael Corleone wouldn't have dared to keep his enemies this close. I'm sorry for keeping the truth for you for so long, and were we to speak again, I imagine you would say the same thing to me. Whether you would mean it or not is another matter entirely. The truth is, none of that matters. There's no point in trying to fix what has already been broken beyond repair, because whatever we were to each other was built on lies and bad intentions, which means it was nothing from the start. But even if we had been honest with each other, and even if we could trust each other, you and I could never have a future together. It became crystal clear tonight that I don't belong in your world, and I never have. Don't worry. You'll still get what you want from me. I told you the other night that I wanted to help you, and I will keep my word. You win. Tessa.
Oh, fuckity fuck, fuck.
Arthur, get up!
The shrill sound of my sister's voice wakes me from a dead sleep. I open my eyes just in time for her to throw open the curtains and let the sun burn the corneas off my eyeballs.
Ah, shit! The parade is starting in 15 minutes. Vincent has come by 3 times already to wake you.
She rips off my covers, then screams and turns around.
Why are you naked?
I sleep in the nude. I gather a sheet around me.
Why the hell are you tearing my covers off anyway? I just told you. You are meant to be outside in your morning suit right now, looking more like a crown prince and less like a vagabond.
Can you dial back the shrill by about 10 points? I have a splitting headache.
Get up!
Her heels click across the floor.
The entire country is waiting for us. You will not keep them waiting if you know what's good for you.
Exactly 23 minutes later, I climb into the gold and black open-air carriage, dressed in my ridiculous grey penguin suit and top hat. My father and grandmother sit across from me, and I sit next to Arabella, facing backwards as the horses begin to jostle us around for the unbearably long trek around the city. Grandmother is in a yellow dress with a large feathered matching hat that is so bright it's like sitting across from the sun. Arabella is in a white dress with pink flowers and a tiny hat that looks like it belongs on a chihuahua. I burst out laughing.
Nice hat. Did your maid shrink it in the dryer?
Arabella sighs.
So glad you could join us. It wouldn't be a parade without your snarky commentary.
Finally up, I see.
My father sneers.
Who plans a bloody parade at 10 in the morning the night after a ball? I grumble.
Well, maybe if you didn't get piss drunk and stay up all night, you would have had an easier time getting up at a respectable hour,
Arabella says.
You didn't seem drunk at the ball,
my grandmother says.
I wasn't. That was after. Why would you and Tessa start drinking so late at night?
She asks. She's gone. I take a flask out of my pocket. I was drinking alone. I tip up the flask and let the liquid burn down my throat. I feel like I could vomit. But if I can keep it down, a little pick-me-up is exactly what the doctor ordered. Okay, so I'm not a doctor. But I did play one once in a fun little role-playing thing with the Duchess of Funsville. So I figure I'm qualified to prescribe alcohol to fill the gaping hole in my soul.
Put that away, you bloody idiot!
My dad says, leaning forward to take it from me. I raise my hand so it's out of his reach and glare at him.
Oh, it's good to be tall.
I'll have it finished by the time we leave the palace gates. I tip it back and let the rest pour down my throat until the flask is empty.
What do you mean, she was gone?
My grandmother asks. Just that.
Good. So the girl can take a hint, my father says.
My gaze hardens.
What exactly is that supposed to mean?
Arabella swats at me with a hand.
Put that away. We're about to cross the river.
I tuck the flask back in my pocket and hear the thrum of the television news helicopter that will follow us for the next 3 torturous hours. Oh, Christ. Where is a lone shooter when I need one?
No answer, Father?
I simply paid her the kindness of ensuring she was being realistic about the future.
As soon as we cross the river, the sound of people cheering joins the slapping of the helicopter blades. As if on cue, we all turn to look out the carriage and begin to smile and wave at the crowd. None of us move our mouths, but we manage to hold an entire conversation through our teeth. My father waves as he says,
"Don't I get a thank you? I was doing your dirty work for you. I saw you with Brooke, and knew you'd want to rid yourself of the blogger woman as quickly as possible."
"We've been over this before. I have no interest in marrying Brooke."
"Tell me you're not actually considering that little idiot to be queen."
I grin at a group of children waving miniature paper versions of our family's flag. "You're a total son of a bitch." "No offense, Grandmother."
"None taken, darling."
"I may be a son of a bitch, but that's better than being an utter disappointment."
"Huh," my grandmother says. "If anyone in this carriage is a disappointment, it's you, Winston. A bitter one."
"Shut up, you old bat."
"Don't speak to Gran that way."
"I'll speak to her any way I like. I'm the bloody king."
"Not for long." My voice comes out sounding like Professor Snape. If I weren't so filled with rage, I'd find this almost amusing.
"What is that supposed to mean? Planning a regicide, are we?"
he asks, as he points at a little boy in the crowd and pretends to laugh. "If I am, believe me, you won't know until it's too late." Neck getting sore. "Smile and wave to the opposite side now."
"I could have you locked away for saying such things."
"Then do it. I'm sure the company would be an improvement." "No offense, Arabella, Grandmother."
"None taken. Winston, did you really chase that lovely girl away?"
"What lovely girl? You can't be referring to that dumb bitch of a reporter."
"Say it again, and I swear to God, I'll punch your face right here." I don't know why I'm defending the woman who ran out on me last night, but somehow I can't stop myself. My father snorts.
"I honestly can't decide whether to hope for victory or defeat at the referendum. Victory will mean putting an absolute moron in charge when I die."
"Stop it, the both of you. You should both be ashamed of yourselves," Arabella hisses, her face frozen in a wide smile. "Neither of you deserves to rule so much as a sandcastle, let alone a real kingdom." My father lets out a strangled laugh.
"Oh, and do you think you'd do a better job, with all your experience hosting tea parties and weeping over stray dogs?"
"I would do a better job than a man who gets caught evading his taxes, then flits about to get his jollies with women from every corner of the globe." "The earth is round, dear," Grandmum says. "I know that. It's an expression."
"What did you say to her?" I growl at my father. Arabella thinks I'm referring to her.
"I said it's an expression, which it is. I know the earth is round. I'm the one who called it a globe."
I meant father. The booze is kicking in finally, numbing my rage, but also my self-control. Not sure if this will be a good thing or a bad thing.
"What did you tell Tessa?"
"I merely told her that you would require a more suitable woman as your wife, which you will."
Before I can respond, the carriage stops in front of the abbey. Two footmen hurry around to open the half doors for us and help the ladies down so we can shake hands with the people and accept flowers and cards. I seize the opportunity to hop over the barricades and stride straight into a pub on the corner with a crowd, as well as my security team, in tow.
"I'd like to buy a round for the house," I call to the bartender, which earns me a cheer as I make my way up to the bar. "I'll have a pint of sheep shagger gold, please."
I take off my hat and lean my elbow on the bar.
"Oh, can you make it fast? I'm in the middle of a parade,"
I say to the man behind the bar. He gives me a shrug as he pulls on the tap.
"I can pour fast, but I'm afraid drinking it down is the bit that takes all the time."
He slides a glass to me.
"Leave that to me."
I turn to the crowd.
"Here's to our 800th birthday. Even if I never sit my royal ass down on the throne, may we have another 800 more."
I gulp down the beer in one go, which seems to be worthy of even more reverence than buying everyone around. I set down the glass and turn to the other patrons, who are all lining up to get their free drink.
"All right, that's me. I have to get back to the parade."
Turning to Ollie, I mutter, "Forgot my wallet. Can you pay the man, and I'll square up with you later?" Ollie, who already has his credit card out, just nods. We've been through this before. Getting out is a lot harder than walking in.
I'm stopped every few feet to sign autographs and pose for photos. I make an ass of myself, doing the hang loose sign and making funny faces for the cameras. Give the people what they want, right? Know your audience and all that bullshit. When I get back to the carriage, my family sits waiting and glaring openly. I hop in and sit down. Oh, don't look so sour. I was just doing some PR. You should try it sometime, father. You know, actually spend a few minutes with the people of your nation. If you had bothered to do it even a little, we wouldn't be about to have all our stuff thrown out on the lawn.
Is that what your little peasant girl told you?
My father asks. Grandmum takes her turn now.
Oh, do shut up! The pair of you are like a couple of children badly in need of a smack bottom.
I open my mouth to speak, but she silences me with a finger pointed in my face.
Not one more word out of your bratty mouth. If the two of you want to go around when we're back inside the castle walls, you have my blessing, but not here. Not when the vote is only weeks away. You will conduct yourselves with a sense of decorum, or I'll slap those stupid hats right off your heads.
When she's done, she turns and smiles at the crowd and resumes her dainty waving, as though we've just been chatting about the weather. God, I love that woman.
34. So, this is rock bottom. Tessa. I wake to the sound of the hairdryer down the hall. Oh, that's horribly loud. I open my eyes to find that I'm on the couch. My own couch. All at once the events of the night before come tumbling down on me, crushing my heart and causing my stomach to lurch. The necklace, the dancing, the slippers, the lies, Brooke, the king, the running away, the champagne. Oh, bollocks. I slowly sit up and pull off the quilt to find I am still in my ball gown. The boning is digging into my sides and back, reminding me never to go to a ball again. My ribs needn't worry, however, because my aching heart will make sure I never repeat such a mistake. Good morning, Cinderella. Nikki crosses the room and gives me a sympathetic smile. What time is it? Almost noon. I wasn't sure if I should wake you or just let you sleep. I don't have anywhere to be. I catch a whiff of myself and recoil. Except maybe the shower. I watch as she walks to the sink. She comes back with a glass of water and a bottle of Advil. Here. Thanks. She sits on the armchair. So spill it first or shower first? Shower, I say, nodding firmly. Then my shoulders drop and I start to sob. Loud, pitiful, soul-shaking sobs. Oh, sweetie. Nikki plants herself next to me and puts her arm around my shoulder while I succumb to my sadness. You fell hard, didn't you? So hard. I'm such an idiot. I sob and sniffle. He was just using me the whole time. What an asshole. She pats my back as I cry. What? Did he tell you last night after the ball or something? I sniffle. It was all a lie, sipping wine at sunset. His feelings for me? All of it. He doesn't even like jelly babies. I'm not following, hun. I know, because I'm not making any sense. I'm too stupid to make sense. I dissolve into tears while Nikki holds me. That's not true, sweetie. You're one of the smartest people I know. You just have terrible taste in men. No asshole radar at all. I nod. You're right. You're always right. And you're such a good friend to help me when I stink so badly. Yes, I am, she says. Tell you what. You go shower, I'll make you some tea and toast, and you tell me everything. I nod. Okay. I stand and walk across the room. Can you make my decisions for a while? I don't think I can be trusted. Sure, honey. First decision is that you go shower. When I get to my tiny bathroom, I take a moment to look around. I'm home, where it's safe. No horrible princes who pretend to be in love with me. No fancy lady doctors. No nasty kings. I stare at myself in the mirror. Most of my eye makeup is mashed down onto my cheeks, and my skin is basically just a bunch of blotchy red patches. The sight of it makes me cry pitifully. 45 minutes later, I emerge in sweats and a hoodie. My hair drips onto my shoulders as I wander slowly back to the kitchen. Nikki's watching the news. There he is, Arthur walking out of a pub with a top hat and a huge grin. He looks devastatingly handsome and happy. Why is he so fucking happy? And why is he wearing that hat? Shit. Nikki quickly shuts off the television. Your toast is ready. Turn that back on. No. I'm serious, Nick. Turn it back on. I want to see what he's doing. Remember, you put me in charge of your life for now. First rule is no stalking, which in your case includes the news, unfortunately. What was he doing? Why isn't he at home in bed crying his eyes out because I'm gone? Second rule is that you can't spend all your time trying to figure out why he isn't devastated, because the only reasonable explanation is that he's a total son of a bitch who doesn't deserve you. But he's so wonderful. My face twitches and I'm about to cry again. Oh yes, here it goes. I'm ashamed to say things went downhill from there. The rest of the afternoon and evening was pretty much a repeat of the same conversation over and over. So much for having a bit of fun and getting out before things get serious. So much for maybe there is a good man for me after all. So much for love does exist and my knight in shining armor actually wears a crown on special occasions. So much for incredible orgasms and melt-in-your-mouth blueberry scones. God, I forgot about the scones. I will miss them so. I keep my phone off and don't turn on my computer for the next 2 days, mostly because as soon as Nikki leaves, she's going to stay at Dr. McPerfect's for a while, I break out the wine and spend the next 48 hours watching ABNC with the shades drawn, just in case I can get a glimpse of his gorgeous face again. And I do, because apparently, now that we're through, he's turned into quite the man about the town. He's at everything, smiling and laughing and joking with everyone who comes near him. Each image is a dagger to my heart, even with the numbing effect of the wine. I'm now a disgusting mess, sweating out alcohol from my pores and eating handfuls of cereal straight from the carton at each meal. I sigh to myself. At least things can't get any worse, right, Chester? Chester moves his gills to reassure me that it's all going to be okay. He's been dubbed the PR Prince, Veronica Platt says into the camera. The new, improved, fully accessible future monarch has vowed to be the eyes, ears, and voice of the people. He recently set up a Twitter account and has started posting pics on Instagram, but the past few days he's making appearances in the most surprising places. Giles Bickley has more on this. Thank you, Veronica. Yes, Prince Arthur has done an about-face, and quite frankly, it's about time. Since the ball, he's launched an all-out war on anti-royal sentiments, pulling out all the stops to prove that the monarchy belongs in Avonia. I sit and watch as Arthur plucks a baby out of an adoring fan's arms. Even the baby adores him, laughing as he holds her up and makes little goo-goo sounds. I hate that baby, I tell Chester, who swims in his bowl as though to agree. Oh yes, she is a smug baby. You're exactly right. The buzz of my intercom startles me and I spill my wine on my hoodie. And yes, it is the same hoodie I've been wearing for 2 full days and nights. What? It's very comforting. I ignore the buzzing and go back to hating babies, but whoever is at the door is very persistent. I get up and walk over to the intercom, press the button and bark, "Go away!" The buzzing starts up again. I press the button again. "What?" "I have flowers for Miss Tessa Sharp." "From whom?" "It doesn't say, miss." My heart skips a beat. Arthur. "Come up!" I open the door and wait impatiently for the lift door to open. When it does, I see a man in a suit walking toward me. He's holding the bouquet and a large yellow envelope. The envelope should set off alarm bells in my head, but I'm too focused on the flowers to notice. "Tessa Sharp," he says. "Yes," I smile. "I don't remember seeing you around the palace. Are you new?" He gives me a confused look for a second, then hands me the flowers and the envelope. "You've been served." So, turns out Chester was wrong. Things could get worse. And they did. I've just been served notice that the makers of the shock jogger are suing me for $1 million for misrepresenting and thereby creating a hostile market for their product. I shouldn't blame Chester, though. His brain is the size of a grain of rice. No way I should be counting on his predictions to come true.
35. Dad jokes and finger guns. Arthur. Have you ever had to become a version of yourself you despise? I mean, really loathe with everything in you. And even standing under a scolding shower until you run the entire palace out of hot water doesn't make you feel clean? Maybe not, but that's how I've felt over the last 2 weeks. I've become the cheesy, dad-joke-making, finger-gun-pointing-while-clicking-salesman for the royal fucking family. I've kissed so many babies, my lips are going to stay in the pucker position if I don't stop. At least it gives me something to focus on all day, rather than succumbing to the black void of despair that overtook me when Tessa ran out on me. Pathetic, I know. I'm fighting the urge to call and text her repeatedly until she gives me a chance to explain. Yes, I used the information from a dating profile to cheat a bit, but only at the beginning. The rest was real. Very real. I should call her. I can't let things end this way. This is foolish. I pick up the phone yet again. But then I think about her plotting with the slime minister and set it back down. I go through this cycle about 20 times a day. The guilt, the wishing to explain, then the hurt, the anger, and the hopelessness. Her words in the letter come to mind and slap me on the face again. If there's one thing about me, it's that I can take a hint. She's clearly through with me. Wham, bam, thank you, Arthur. I hope she gets a job with Jack Jansen. I really do. They deserve each other. It was all a lie on her part. All those late-night confessions and all that stupid staring into each other's eyes and all those laugh-until-your-cheeks-hurt moments, all of it meant nothing to her. Too bad I miss her so much. It actually hurts. I've been rather an idiot, haven't I? I kept my enemy so close that I can't seem to sleep or eat or even think without her near me. So for now, I'm in some weird sort of hell where I feel sick to the stomach all day and night, either from acting like a sodding politician or because, across the river, the only woman I've ever let even close to my heart is either very angry or very hurt or both. And I feel the exact same way. The irony of it is that the only person I want to talk to about this is a person who inflicted this horrible pain on me. She's the only one who will truly understand what I'm going through. Isn't that a kick in the neck? I pace the room and check my phone for what must be the 12 millionth time, but still nothing. Just a few hundred notifications on my Instagram and Twitter accounts. Ugh. Dex has given up on me and gone to bed. He paced behind me for the first evening, but then gave up around 2 a.m. Lazy, lazy pig. A buzzing on my phone has me hurrying across the room. I pick it up, but it's not her. Instead, it's an article about her. Royal watchdog sued for $1 million. Oh, bollocks. I sink onto my bed and quickly scan the article.
I think about how she promised she'd still help me, even though we're through, and a glimmer of hope comes over me. What if I can do something?